Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Welcome back, my friends, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 68 for October 28th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm here to help guide you through that magical world of networks, all things connected, servers, workstations, Macs, you know, whatever we can talk about on this show that's going to help you gain more knowledge and get prepared to do your job just a little bit better, not a lot better, just a little bit better, and to maybe give you that comfort level that you need to be that systems administrator that you want to be. And as the opening said, you know, this show has been designed for all the systems administrators out there and the accidental techies. Now, if you don't know what an accidental techie is, it's that person that goes to the office and gets a job as an accountant. I met one of these people once, the last job I got hired at. And the accidental techie is that person that gets shoved in there and said, hey, do you know how to point and click? And you're like, yeah, I can point and click pretty well. Well, why don't you add people to the server and take care of the file shares and take care of their email server and all that stuff, all things connected. Well, you know, we're here to help you because you get thrust into that role. And, you know, I want to make it a little bit more comfortable for you to do so. First, though, let me tell you that this show is a proud member, a very proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Check out all the great technology shows at techpodcast.com. You will be happy you do, and you will spend a lot more hours listening to these great tech shows in your travels, maybe on the way to work, maybe as you're flying through the air on a plane. We talked a little bit about the live server course, and I know a lot of you are interested out there in it. And I'm still, you know, I want this thing to be awesome. I want this thing to be amazing. I don't just want to start a server course and teach you the same thing that you can learn on my online courses that's already available. You know, we want it to be a two-way street. So I'm trying to deal down a company, first of all, to host the shows on. And I probably will be hosting those with WebEx. WebEx is nice because it allows you to see my screen. And when we go along setting this brand new Windows 2012 server up, or a virtual machine, and you'll be able to see everything going on. You'll be able to ask questions, and that's what we want to do. Right now, we have a list of 9 people, so we had a new person actually ask about it this week, so that's great. So if you need to know more about Windows Server, and you want to learn a little bit about Windows Server 2012, and you're trying to figure out, you know, do I need to upgrade or not, eventually you will upgrade, then you may want to actually take this live server course. If you do, please email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. I'm putting that email list together, so if you haven't heard from me yet, that's okay. I have your name. And if you think I might have missed you, email me again so I can get you on that list. And I'm going to be emailing everybody on that list with the details very soon. I know we wanted to start in October. I don't think that's going to happen. But, you know, again, I want to put it together and make sure it's right before we get started. Also, if you have a moment or two or a second or whatever, check out this website, tipsfromtheserveroom.com, where you can comment on these shows. You can also leave us voice messages at 724-701-0550. Once again, that number is 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, I would love to hear from you on this other platform. You can email me at jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And I do receive, you know, some emails, but nothing to the magnitude of what I'm hoping for. So if you have a question, and, you know, they always say, and I've been in education a long time, they always say, you know, the dumbest questions are the ones that's never asked. So you're sitting there with the question, you're saying, you know, I don't want Jack to read this and say, you know, Bob, because I always use just your first name. So it can be pretty generic. You can even use an alias if you want me to use an alias name on the air. I will do that. You know, but you're saying like, well, you know, Jack, I want to know something about organizing my Active Directory in the OUs, and Those are good questions. And maybe somebody else out there is thinking the same thing, but they're just scared to ask also. Email those to jackstechcorner@gmail.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, and as at Technoman, T-E-C-H-N-O-M-A-N, Technoman. Forgive me, I started that a very long time ago. So anyway, we're going to start off tonight with something new to the show. I'm just trying to bring it up here in a web browser so I can kind of follow along with you as I explain this to you. And what we're going to talk about here is I'm going to try my very best, and sometimes this doesn't work out too well, but we're going to have a tool of the week, some software tool, maybe a hardware tool, something that's going to help you in your job. And folks, this tool I found for you this week is just simply amazing. And to be honest with you, I didn't just find it this week. We've been using it for probably about a year now. And it's an amazing tool. And that tool, and I'm going to have a link in the show notes. Don't worry about writing it down because, you know, it's a little bit longer website. Well, not real long, but you get the idea. Anyway, the tool that I'm talking about tonight is called Bulk AD Users. That's Bulk AD Users. What it allows you to do is it allows you to do a lot of stuff. Now, you have to have your Active Directory organized and have your OUs set up. You know, if you have all your departments if you're in education, you have all your students under one user file, what tends to happen is you can't really use a program like this. I mean, you could, but the idea of Bulk AD Users is something like we want to add a new security group. And we want that security group to be set up so we can have some access to something, a print server or something. And we want to give that to just the finance department or just your HR department. That's why you need these OUs set up. And you would use this Bulk AD tool. You would click on the tool. It connects to your server. And then you can filter based on your organizational units. Folks, this is amazing. What we use it for is to reset a whole group of passwords. So I can have a whole group of say, students. You can have a whole group of clients. And I can reset their passwords all at one time instead of doing that one at a time. And then there's a new one that we started playing with that is totally amazing. And I like it a lot. It's called Password Control. Password Control lets you do just that. On your workstation, you launch it, and it connects to your domain controller. And what it allows you to do is just simply change passwords. You know, how many times do you have to remote into your Active Directory controller, search for the user's name, reset their password, right? It gets to be a very old task that we must perform. What Password Control allows you to do is you just bring it up on your Windows desktop. You launch the application. You search by username. So whatever username is, you put their name in there. And presto. It gives you all their information on the right-hand side of who it is, what OU they're in. And then you simply go on, you type a new password and click a button that says Reset Password. It is extremely amazing and extremely easy. Most of all, out of all this software, it is extremely free. It's free software. Now, I don't know, even on their website, I was looking around here today, a little bit earlier, trying to dig around here before this show and trying to figure out if there's a way to donate. Because, you know, a lot of these guys that write this software, and this guy is amazing. I'll give you the website now, but there will be a link. If you go to WiseSoft, that's WiseSoft.co.uk, that is where you'll find this software. And again, it's free. To register the software, it's free, and then they give you a free key code. So you can actually put that into the software, and then it's a registered software. So right now, registered users, they have 32,297 registered users. I did email the company and I said, look, I'm going to mention you on my show this evening. So let's try to get that boosted up to, let's say, 35,000. So just from listening to this show, download it, register it. And if you're using Windows servers, you will not go wrong with this program. It's extremely easy to use and it works extremely well. So once again, that's Bulk AD Users and Password Control. And don't forget, it's totally free. So it's a great tool of the week. Folks, if you have any tools out there you're using and you say, Jack, I got a tool that I'm using on servers, you know, I've been locating a lot of stuff here, or scripts or anything, let me know, especially if they're free tools, because we're going to spread those out through the community. I always believe in one thing, is don't reinvent the wheel. If I'm doing something, I helped out some of my colleagues in other, you know, districts that I work with, and they call me and say, Jack, do you know how to do this? Do you know how to do that? Or I actually wrote a program that actually imports the user base into Active Directory and sets up the accounts, builds email accounts, and does all that work for us. Well, all schools are created pretty much equal, and if they're all using Google Apps, they all need to set their Active Directory up a certain way. So I share this information. I don't sell it to them or say, look, I'm going to charge you this fortune price for it. If I can help pay it forward, folks, pay it forward. Because we're all in this technology boat together. We really are. And I tell you that on these shows almost every week, where we need to work together, right? So if you have an idea, a tool tip, or something you wrote, maybe that you want to share, let me hear about it, because we're going to spread the word and get your message out there, especially if it's a free tool. I'm trying not to do a whole lot of advertising on this show, so I really don't want to advertise your product, but I'm sure we can talk about that possibility also. But really, we're looking for the great free tools out there that you're using. Okay, I told you last week a little bit about building a server. We talked just briefly about them. What would you have to do to build a new server? And I thought, you know, I searched the internet high and low for somebody to tell me what would be the ground rules of building a server. And I actually found, I came up with almost zero hits on it. So I thought, I know about building a server. I've been doing this for almost 27, 28 years now. And I've put together a lot of server specs. And I know the ground rules to doing so. So I thought, I will put it together and bring it to you this evening. So we're going to talk about that tonight, about simply building, or should I say configuring, a new server for your company. Let's first begin talking about repurposing a server from one role to another. I don't really like to take a server offline, take it out of my rack, and throw it in the cupboard. I think it's a waste of space, and it could be a waste of usable technology. So that's something that you really got to think about. Now, saying that, let's say you have a file server that's getting really pounded, and you're adding more and more people on it, you're adding more and more folders on it. It's just getting to the point where it's not going to run anymore. It's not going to do the performance level that you want it to do. What we need to do there is we need to build a new server or order a new server. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But first of all, let's talk about, well, can that server be repurposed into other services? And folks, I have to tell you, absolutely guaranteed. You know, we do it all the time. It's already in the rack. All you got to do is you would shut the file services off and maybe create another role or turn on a different role for it and repurpose that server. Something I didn't have in my show notes, it just came to thought, because when I do these shows, a lot of times it brings up some new thoughts in my head. Here's something to think about. If, for instance, you're running a file server and it's Windows 2003 server, and you're going to down the server and you're going to bring up a new file server, let's say a Windows Server 2012. You're going to bring up that new server as your file server. Don't repurpose that server with Windows 2003 server on it. Now, you know, you might say, well, Jack, it doesn't really want to take, maybe it's not a 64-bit server. Some guys still have 32-bit servers running in their racks. I mean, we have one that I can think about. And you can't load the 64-bit server 2012 on it. That's okay. At least load 2008 R2 on it. Be a little bit newer, because we know 2003 is coming to end of life. There's no sense at this point today repurposing a server and then having to shut it down, you know, in a year's time, because it's no longer updated. So what services or roles can we install on a server that we can maybe repurpose? The things that came to mind when I was setting this talk up tonight is a DNS server. I did that with one of our old 32-bit servers. I made it a secondary DNS server. It's still humming along. It's got Windows 2008 R2 on it, and it's still humming along very well on the rack. The next thing that we talked about the past 2 weeks is a print server. And I can give you some stories from the trenches about setting up a print server, because I've been working on one for a client. And a lot of the stuff I told you about the pointing, clicking, it finds the printers, that's not entirely true, but I'm going to save that for another day. But you can set up a print server. You can also use it as a DHCP server, just to leave it simply sit there. Maybe you want to get the DHCP services off of your Active Directory domain controller. So you want to get that cleared off of there, and you want to put it somewhere. Well, if you're repurposing the server and all it's going to do is DHCP, folks, that's going to hum along for years handing out your IP addresses. So it's really a great way to repurpose them servers. Your CEO or your boss is going to be very pleased with you, because you're not killing old equipment, you know, and selling it on eBay for $100 or $200. I've seen rack mounted servers on eBay. I bought my Dell PowerEdge 1850 rack mount server that I use for my online classes. I purchased that thing for, I think, $125 with free shipping. So you don't want to get into that. You don't want to be selling gear on eBay and have to ship it. That's, you know, a lot of work for the tech department that I don't think we need to be involved in. So a lot of times these servers get stuck in a closet, and we keep them for what? I don't even know why we keep these servers around. But anyway, repurpose them. They're in the rack already. Fire them babies back up and get them humming along, and put them back into service. All right. So the next thing we're going to discuss here is someone giving you a server. Now, I've just been working with an email with one of my students from my online classes, and we'd be emailing back and forth. And we've been talking about his company getting some new Windows workstations. The Windows workstations came preloaded with, I believe it was Windows 7 already installed, but there's some problems with the profiles, there's some problems with the user accounts, there's some problems with the computer. So my first thought was, and probably my only thought, I gave him the advice to reformat the hard drives and reload a fresh copy of Windows 7 Professional. That way you can bring it up on your network, on your domain, properly. That is the proper way to do it. So where I'm getting at is, sometimes even getting something for free comes at an overall cost. And you have to think about this. If a company is getting rid of old hardware, let's say, for instance, my Dell PowerEdge 1850. Say I don't want it anymore. Say it's too old. It's a 32-bit server. That's a downside of life. So I can't load any 64-bit operating systems on it. And I'm going to donate it. So I'm going to donate that to, let's say, a small facility. Maybe a preschool. They're going to use it for some kind of, I don't know why they would need a server in their rack. Or maybe, I know, preschools. I know my wife is a teacher, and they do provide email, so maybe they're going to try to repurpose it as an Exchange server. Not the best of ideas, right? Because if I'm giving it away, if I can't use it anymore, then it may, in fact, be end of life for that particular server. But if somebody does give you something, it might sound like a good idea, but from my experience, I would tell you to stay away from free. Now, we're going to talk about that a little bit, because you have to be careful when you're staying away from free. And this is one thing. Well, one thing I did put in my notes, unless you're going to use it for one of the roles mentioned above. So if that is that Dell PowerEdge 1850 or some Dell standing server or something, and you're going to repurpose that and say, oh, it's a DHCP server, it may be absolutely fine. But if you're going to bring it in, put it as your primary Exchange server, or you're going to set it up as an Active Directory domain controller, and you think you're getting this great big boost in your network, think again, folks, because it's not going to happen. Also, you want to know if the OS will come on the server. Did anybody ever go out? If you're a for-profit company, now I've worked for nonprofits for a lot of years, but I owned a for-profit business. And when we had our for-profit internet business, what we found was software is very expensive. You don't get that stuff like from, I think it's called techsoup.org. If you're a nonprofit, check that out, techsoup.org. You can get a ton of stuff, software, very, very reasonably priced. Because these nonprofits do what they call a consortium buy. What that is they'll order, like when I order my, let's say, Microsoft Office 2013 media, and I order licenses, I'm ordering from an organization that purchased 10,000 units from Microsoft. So what they do is when you get 10,000 units, you get a really good price. And when you're a nonprofit, you get an even a better price. So you're buying this stuff for, I don't know what it was last time I looked, $50 for the professional. Windows Office 2013 professional for like around $50 per unit, per computer. So, but if you're a for-profit business out there, and I'm sure a lot of you listening to this podcast, you are a for-profit business. So if that server does not come with the server operating system on it, you have to buy it, you're going to lay out some cash. And I know what you're thinking already. Jack, wait, I still got the hardware for free. And I understand that. But it could be older hardware. It could be 32-bit. And if you accidentally, you know, buy 64-bit Windows Server 2012, it's not going to install. So be very careful. Make sure you look at the specs of the servers to know what you're getting yourself into. If it does come with the OS and it's something you're not familiar with, again, it's a cost, because now there's a cost of retraining you and your tech crew. So things sound great on the top. When we talk about free, we like, oh, things are free. Now, if I can get a free full tank of gas in my truck, I could be pretty happy with that, you know. But if I'm getting a free server and it's 15 years old, I'm probably not going to be as happy with that. Let me take you back and tell you about a little story here, because, you know, stories sometimes make a podcast more interesting. So we're going to bring you this story. Once in my last position I held, we had a CEO, and the CEO was so excited. He came back from this business meeting that he was at, and he wanted to tell me that there was a local bank that wanted to donate their old AS400 system. Now, me, you know, I didn't really know. I've never had any experience with an AS400. It's like, wow, great, we're getting a new server? Cool. I mean, they're going to be delivering this AS400. And they're going to be giving it to us nonprofit people. I think that's very, very nice of them. I think it's wonderful. Well, at first thought, I thought this couldn't be too bad. Now, when this server was brought into our facility and it was dropped off to our technology staff, I went over to take a look at this AS400. And it looks like it came fresh from the 70s. Now, this was only 10 years ago. It was big, it was heavy, and just on a side note, just because a server is big and heavy does not make it a great server. This thing was humongous, and the operating system, I didn't know at the time, was based on AS400. Apparently, this was a networking software that was used in the banking industry. I don't even know if they still use it, and I kind of doubt it. I doubt that they're even using this anymore. It seemed to be an old form of Unix, some type of Unix. Me not being familiar with Unix, it wasn't going to do me much good. I didn't want to retrain myself on it because who uses Unix? Okay, a lot of you out there are saying, Jack, I do. And I'm not knocking you. I think Unix is solid. Linux is solid. All those different versions of Linux are very solid and work very well. In the server industry, they're fine. But when you get the AS400, it was an extreme heavy paperweight. I mean, we used it actually for a while as a doorstop to hold one of our doors open in our server room. So, you know, think about that, how big this thing could have been. So we found out later that we had more technology on our desk in our adding machines than what this server actually was capable of producing. So we ended up, after we used it for a doorstop for a few years, we ended up taking it. We ended up just junking it and throwing it away. So we did finally scrap it and get rid of it. So there you have it. Now, let's just take a little bit of thought about donations. And this is where I was getting at before. When somebody's going to donate something to your company, if I'm a Fortune 500 company and you're a nonprofit organization, And I call you up and I say, look, I know about your nonprofit. You know, we don't have a lot of money to give you, but we have a couple servers that are 20 years old. Please don't respond with, well, Jack, you know, from Tips from the Server Room said, don't take your junk. No. Accept it, smile at them, and say, thank you very much. The reason you want to do that, because if you do not take a donation, you will never get called again. You get off their list of donations. The reason I tell you that is sometimes you have to take bad stuff because you're hoping in the future for some good stuff. The most recent donation that we received, I got a call that said, look, Jack, we have a few flat screen LCD monitors we'd like to give you. My first response, are they all working? Absolutely, Jack, they all work. They all have great color, no blown out pixels. 19-inch flat screen monitors. So I said, well, we will accept those because we can always use a flat screen monitor, right? If a monitor goes on somebody's desk, if it's a CRT, you don't want them, but if it's an LCD, why not? And that way, if a flat screen goes on somebody's desk, an LCD, we just change it out, we put another monitor in, we don't have to buy any. When I arrived at the facility, it was a Fortune 500 company. When I arrived at the facility, they started rolling these carts of monitors out. There had to be every bit of 60 to 70 19-inch LCD monitors. And I said, wait a minute. First of all, what does your company do? And they said, we're into drafting and graphic designs. And I said, what did you guys upgrade to if you're getting rid of all these? And they are newer, so they're nice monitors. I said, what did you upgrade to? Oh, well, we put two 24-inch LCD monitors for every one of our workers on their desk. Because, you know, when you're doing CAD drawings, when you're doing graphic arts, the more real estate you have, the better off you are. So that's what they did. So they wanted to get rid of the stuff. They didn't want to throw it away or scrap it because it worked. Folks, we're still using those monitors today, and they are fantastic. So again, if a company calls you and says, you know, we have a 25-year-old server, don't say, that's junk. Because then you're not going to get the good stuff. Maybe, you know, I'm hoping next time they have like some Cisco switches, some layer 2, layer 3 switches they want to donate. That's the stuff I'm looking for to get donated into our facilities, because then I don't have to buy it and you look like a hero, right? At the end of the year, you're going to get a big Christmas bonus. Well, in nonprofits, that doesn't work. We don't get bonuses. But for your profit, for a profit business, maybe you would get a bonus. So that's something you want to think about. All right, so we talked about that. Let's go down here a little bit. Now let's talk with all the ways to obtain a server that has been covered. Let's talk about ordering a new server. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of tonight, Jack, and just get on with it. We're going to do that now. These are some key issues you have to write down. When you're going to buy a new server, one, it doesn't have to be shiny. Two, it doesn't have to have a lot of lights on it. Three, it doesn't have to weigh a lot. We talked about that earlier. It doesn't have to weigh a lot of weight because that doesn't really matter. What it does have to do, it has to perform a certain feat of magic for your company. How many times have we talked in the past about building something that's going to last you at least 2 or 3 years out? You know, folks, you have to have some insight to your company. If you're a new technologist, because I've been in this problem too, I had before, is I'm a new technologist working in a new company, and I walk in, and the first thing the boss says is, Jack, we want to order a new server. What do we buy? Well, wait a minute. I've only been here, 20 minutes. I don't know. What you need to do first is go around the company. You have to do a networking, a computer, and a user assessment. You have to see how people are using things, what they've been doing in the past few years, so you know maybe where you're going with this stuff. These are critical things you got to think about. Now, if you're old school, if you're like me and you've been with your company for, 5 years, or you know the ropes, you know what's going on, you know what you need. Let's talk about a game plan. Now, again, I'm trying to think, and I may actually type these up and stick them somewhere so you guys can download it. So you'll have this little cheat sheet or white paper, people like to call it, get my free white paper, whatever. But Instead of you writing them down in your car, I know you might be driving along and you aren't listening. Or now, if you're sitting at your desk, you might want to type these down. These are key things that I came up with that you need to know to buy a new server. The first part, what role is the server being going to play on your network? So what is the server needed for? Is it going to be Active Directory, file server? Is it going to be a DNS server, DHCP server, an Exchange server, and get pounded really hard all day? You have to know, first of all, what you're buying it for. Next, how many users will be connecting to the server's resources? Think about this for a minute. How many users will be connecting to the server's resources? This kind of got me in trouble one time because we used to only have one Active Directory domain controller. I did set up a backup one, and we do have basically it's almost like a load balancing setup we have, where if the first server is getting pounded with logins, the second server says, whoa, wait, buddy, I'll help you out. And it takes some of them logins and works together in that network. So you have to look at how many users you have connecting to the server just to log in. That's the first step. Next step, if it's the DNS server, how much DNS is it doing per day? How many resources is it looking up per day? That's users connecting to your server. If you're going to also double this thing out as a DHCP server, how many nodes on your network that's getting IP addresses? That's going to boost those resources. So not just, I'm not saying you have 20 people logging on the server and you go by 20. Look at each role the server is playing and try to map out in your head. I use paper still, folks. I do. I love Evernote. I think Evernote is probably one of the best applications ever created for my world. And I keep a ton of stuff in there. Keeps me so organized. And I do a lot of my notes in Evernote because I know that's on all my devices. I can pick up my smartphone and work on it. I can pick up my tablet and work on it, my laptop and my desktop. But I do like paper. Sometimes I draw it out. I draw a picture and I'll draw a DNS server up here, service, and I'll draw a DHCP service, Active Directory domain controller service, my AD. Maybe I'll draw my OUs. You get the idea. Know how much use what those users are using on that server. That's resources. Next of all, will the server be standalone or be used for virtual machines? A lot of people miss this step. And we talked about virtual machines in the past. The thing I can tell you about virtual machines is that you have to remember, look at your server now. Look at what you're using now. Look at the resources it's using on your overall server. And I guarantee you're not using 100% of that server. Most organizations today, most organizations I've consulted with and checked out their servers, we found that we can take their primary server and we turn it into a VM, a virtual machine. I load ESXi on it, put it back on ESXi, and load another server on top of that same server and run two and still have enough resources. But if it's going to be standalone, maybe you don't need as bulky server. If it's going to be virtual machines, you want to think of a few more layers on top of that. You want to think about the next thing. If it's virtual machines, how many virtual machines will you be running on that server? A lot of guys out there in the industry, I've seen them and I've worked with them, they want to buy a server with 8 gigs of RAM and they want to load 12 VMs on it. Well, VMware is very good. Don't get me wrong. It's very good at managing memory. It's very good at managing your CPUs. It works extremely well. The issue we have is it starts to bog down the resources, and that's what you got to watch, and you don't want to fall into that trap. So know how many you're planning on setting up on there. And folks, I know occasionally you'll buy it for 3, and you'll eventually throw 4 on it. You'll probably get away with that. Next thing is, if you're thinking about virtual machines, think about how many network cards are needed in the server. And I work with a lot of interns. We have a lot of interns coming through. They're great. I love teaching people server work and networking. But they all want to set up, because we know that VM has a virtual switch built into it. And I believe, I can't remember, I think I looked at it last time, I think it holds 250. Is it 250? I'm not real sure on that number. You might have to look it up. But I think it holds 250 virtual connections. So what that's telling you is you can use one network card and put 250 virtual networking connections through that virtual VMware, the software, and connect to that one card. Is that the best idea? Nope, it's not the best idea. Can you do it? Absolutely. That's built to do that. And VMware is very smart. What I like to do, though, is I look at it, and if I'm planning four virtual machines on there, I make sure my server comes with four network cards or four NICs. A lot of times they're built on the motherboard. It can be a controller card that's plugged into the back of the server. If you can buy it with eight, that would be better yet. This allows me to have an individual cable going into the switch from each individual VM. That's how I set mine up. I'm old schooled. I believe the more bandwidth you have per port, the better off everything is going to run. If you're tunneling everything through that virtual machine, like I said, it's very good. It's smart. To one network card, eventually one day you are going to have a bottleneck. I guarantee it's going to happen, and I've seen it, and it's something that's going you're going to run into. So have a network card per each server. The next thing we're going to talk about is how much hard drive space will be required. You know, a lot of people say, well, Jack, a terabyte, that's a lot. Yeah, it is a lot. You know, but in my studio right now, in here, for all the videos I do on YouTube, all the stuff I do on podcasting, I do a photography show every Sunday. So all this stuff takes up storage space. Folks, I have 5 terabytes just in my backup drives. Now, if you're running a network, you know, and your guys are doing CAD drawings, or you're doing an HR department, or you work for a payroll company, I always live by this rule. You'll never, ever use less storage. You won't. You'll never use less. We're looking at new backup servers now, and I'm trying to figure out what's going to get me 2 years out. And, you know, because I'm already capping, so what's going to make it 2 years out? It's hard to say what your user is going to save. You know, and we have very, very stringent rules on our servers where I have a script that runs every night. And I believe if you go to tipsintheserveroom.com and click on scripts, I think it's in there. What the script does is it goes through all of the users' folders every night, and it strips out things like movies, MP3s, you know, any file that's not a Word document, not Excel. Know your extensions when you set this thing up, though. But it strips those out. It moves them to another folder and it sends me a report. This report I can read and say, okay, well, Joe's been saving a lot of movies. So maybe I go talk to Joe. And I said, don't save movies on the server because you know what? They're not staying there. I'm deleting them. So that's just what happens. And the only reason I move them to another folder is because if a user downloads something, especially if you work in the advertising industry, a lot of times in advertising, they may be working on a website. They may want to publish a certain video. Maybe they have video clips in their server drive. And if you strip that and they can't do their work, you might be out of a job. So make sure you hold that in a folder. But look at that script. I think you're going to be pretty excited. We just set up on an auto run. So it auto runs every night at a certain time, looks at those folders, and it does its job. It's really amazing. I did not write that script. I actually acquired that script over the years. From another podcast at one time, you might have heard of it. I think it was called Casting from the Server Room. Those guys were great. They were up in the Philadelphia area and in New York City or somewhere in New York anyway, around it, or New Jersey. I think it was Philadelphia, New Jersey. It was a great podcast. It's kind of where I got the idea from this one because they went by the wayside, and I don't know what those guys are doing now, but the one guy was an incredible script writer, so check that script out. And the only reason I put them on my site is because I'm very fearful that their site's going to go away at one point. I don't think anybody's paying for the domain. And so I wanted to live on that legacy. So that's where they came from. So I'm giving them all the credit for that. But check those out, those scripts. So hard drive space, you're going to need more than you realize. The next is, will you need a controller card to manage either mirrored or striped drives? And we talked about that before in the show, about mirroring drives, striping them, different setups we can use, you know, different RAIDs, RAID 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. I learned about RAID 10 from somebody watching this or listening to this show. Wonderful. Thank you very much for that. But know what kind of controller card you're going to need. Now you're talking about, do you need multiple drives and how many bays will you need? Remember to always leave room for growth. Whenever I look at a server, I want a minimum of 8 bays. I may only order it with two drives. I may order it with four drives, but I have a minimum of eight bays because I live by the rule, and you heard the rule already, you'll never use less storage. You won't. It's always going to be more, more, and more, and more, and more. And then we're finding out now it's retention, 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 retention. You want to retain people's documents. So you want to make sure you have enough room and enough breathing room. So look at the bays on there. I mean, if you only need two right now, maybe buy four. I mean, I live by the rule of eight because, you know, Dell does a pretty nice job and they're pretty price conscious. If you go from four to eight, it's not really that much more cost. So I try to go with eight. What kind of redundancy are you thinking about? Redundancy. You know, so many people buy a server and they're like, well, I save $50 because I didn't buy two power supplies. Well, you know what? Shame on you. You know, don't save. Don't scrimp when you're buying the server. And don't go hog wild either. Look at the midline servers. You don't need for your company, you know, $150,000 server. You don't need that. And Oracle is making these things. They're amazing, right? They're whole racks. You just wheel the rack in. You plug a network cable into it. You power it up, and that's your server. They're amazing, folks. Anybody remember years ago, decades ago, when a computer took up a whole room? Is that what Oracle's trying to do again? I don't know. I'm not bashing Oracle because it's an amazing company. I love them. I think they do great work. So anyway, but they do have really big servers. You may not need that. So I kind of go midline. You know, if I can buy a server and if I try to hit anywhere between between $4,000 and $8,000, that's my range for when I buy a server, $4,000 to $8,000, but always buy it with a built-in, a secondary redundant power supply. Very important. What type of server are you thinking about? Rack mounted or a tower? That's something else to think about. Roll that in your memory bank a little bit. Do I want a rack mount or do I want a tower server? Now, if you have rack space, rack it, right? You don't want a bunch of towers. When I first took over for a company, I walked in. They had to have six different server towers sitting on everything possible from a box. One was sitting on a monitor. I had to sit on the floor and actually add people to Active Directory. It was horrible. It was a disaster layout. It was like somebody didn't know what they were doing with all their Tonka trucks, and they just threw them in the damn room and shut the door. It was very laughable, and I wish I would have had a good cell phone and to snap pictures because I would love to have those today. But it's been all rebuilt now, and I put racks in. Racks are so much more easy to manage. They're so much cleaner. And it's nice to have all your gear, you know, in one place. So rack them if you can. If not, you have to buy a tower. Tower servers are absolutely fine. You can still buy them with everything we talked about so far. Something to think about if you buy a rack server, this happens a lot of times, is do you have enough rack space? Look in your rack. When you open that rack up and you see the holes, and on ours, I know there's numbers between the holes. I think there's three screw holes. And it'll say number one, two, three. Every three holes is a number, and there's lines. Okay, that's called a unit. So one unit will fit in that 19-inch rack between those lines. So you got 1U, 2U, 3U, and probably a 4. I don't know if I've ever seen one. And they may even come bigger, especially if you go to storage arrays. They can come pretty wide. Before you order your server and you're going to order a 2U or 3U, make sure you can fit it in your rack. Now, granted, the last server that I purchased, I had to move some stuff around in the rack, and that was okay. I wanted to move it around anyway and reorganize it and put the rails in for this new box. And it was a 2U server, so it takes up two of those units. So that would be a total of, I think, six screws, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure it's six. So it's two lines and then two more lines. That's a 2U. And, you know, don't order a 3U and then you get it in, you open your rack up and you only have space for a 1U. Yeah, then you get mud in your face. Or they call it pie in your face. I don't remember. Anyway, once you configure the server, once you get it all configured, and we use Dell servers. I do have two Sun servers. And I tell you what, these babies, and I should knock on wood, these babies are just humming along. I really like them. The reason I bought them is I got a deal. I bought one, got one free. Rack-mounted servers. I thought that was a pretty good deal, and it absolutely was. And a couple months later, guess who bought them? Oracle. And I just had a call from them guys the other day, but Oracle bought Sun servers, and they're amazing, but most of our gear in our server racks are Dells. I like it because I got a Dell rep. I like it because they got Dell engineers. If I call, I get these basic things set up, and I go over my list with them. This is what I need. The engineer designs it. He'll send me the specs back. I read them. Once I agree to it, then we can purchase a server. But the bottom line always revolves around price. Price is the bottom line. It's always going to revolve around the price. But folks, please listen to me. I don't work for any of these companies. None of these companies sponsor this show. Not Dell, not HP, any of the big server companies out there. Don't walk into this with $2,000 and think you're getting something. I mean, unless you need a little tower server, you could probably get away with one of the PowerEdge servers. But do what I've told you to do and listen to what I've given you, because this is years of experience and it's going to help you purchase that server that's going to take you 2, maybe 3 years down the road. And if you have enough storage space and enough advancement for storage, it may take you 5 years down the road. So just listen, spend that money up front, and you're going to be so much, so much happier that you did. If you have any questions about these server specs, now, like I said, I think I'm going to type this up, or I'm going to copy this out of here and post it to a PDF or something, and you can download it on this show's topics. I'll do that right after the show so you have these. And just these couple, questions that you're going to just answer before you order your server. But if you have another question, if you have something that you come up with that maybe I missed, folks, email it to me so I can add it to this list. If it's going to help out another tech out there, hey, guys, girls, we're all in this together. That's what we do. We all work together in technology. Share your knowledge because we have a love for this stuff. If you're in this business because you're going to get rich, you shouldn't be in this business. Because I often tell all my interns, this is a 24/7 business. Even when you come home from work, I get home from work and I'm still doing work for work because we love it. It's a passion. You're doing this for your passion. If this is your career choice, God love you. I guess that's wonderful for you. But it's more to me, it's a passion for what I do. That's why I love sharing this information. And if you have any other thoughts on buying a new server, please let me know. And I'll get those on the next show. So get those in before next Tuesday, and I'll wrap them together, and I'll give people your thoughts about buying a new server. Well, folks, we are going to wrap it tonight there. I think I gave you a ton of information. I did have an email or a comment on the YouTube video from last week. And for those watching the YouTube video, thank you very much. For those not knowing, listening to the podcast, I am recording this as a video, so you get to watch me live and in living color. Whatever that means. But anyway, so you get the same content. It's just you see a face with the voice. I mean, that's the only thing different between the audio and the video. But if you do want to check it out, it's at 42 Technoman on YouTube. That's the number 4, the number 2, Technoman. But I had a comment last week. I said, Jack, look, and I agree with you. I totally do. And I commented back and I told this gentleman that I agree with him that last week I did a show based a lot around steps. Step 1, step 2, how do you do this, how do you do that? That's okay, but for an audio podcast, he says it doesn't work. And if I'm doing the video, I should show the screen. And when I do my photography videos and on YouTube and I do my photography, or you guys watched my some of my classes, you may be on my online classes, it's all what they call screencasted. But on these podcasts, I don't do that because it takes a lot more time to actually put it together. So sometimes it's easier to read it. What I didn't do last week is I didn't put a link with the show notes last week for you to be able to have those steps and follow along. And I do apologize for that. That is my fault. But I try to do that. Just like I said tonight, I'll type up a white paper so you heard it, but I'm sure you didn't write it down. Folks, I listen to 1,000 podcasts myself, and I don't write down everything I hear. But I always can go back and look at show notes to see what's going on. So I do apologize for that one. And if you do watch us on YouTube, please click the subscribe button. Okay, folks, remember, and thank you so much for those out there using my Amazon link. It doesn't make anybody a millionaire, that's for sure. But, it's a couple bucks here, a couple bucks there. And I wasn't going to even talk about it. I actually deleted it from my show today until I went to the Amazon thing and looked. And thank you so much, folks. A lot of you out there are using the Amazon link on the webpage at tipsontheserveroom.com. So if you buy anything, if you buy staples for your stapler, if you buy batteries, if you buy a watch, if you buy a camera, whatever Amazon sells, just go to tipsontheserveroom.com, click on the link. That will take you to Amazon and then purchase as you do normally. And then I get a small percentage back. It doesn't cost you anything more. And I totally, absolutely appreciate all the efforts out there for you people using that. I do appreciate it. Folks, let me close out by saying, if you want to learn more about Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012 R2, or VMware ESXi 5.5 server from install to administration, please check out my online classes, and that is at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. At the top, there's a button at the very top of the page that says online class. Click on that, and that will take you into those online classes. You can click on one of those, go right in, you can sign up for those. All you do with those is you watch a video, and you take a 3 or 4 question little quiz, and at the end of the course, I will mail you a certificate of completion. A lot of people have been emailing me saying, Jack, you know, I think this certificate helped me to get this job. So that's wonderful. Or maybe if you work for a company, you say, hey, boss, I want to get a little bit more continuing education. Most companies have been paying for this for their employees, for their techs. So just a great way to learn from install to administration. And if you haven't worked with Windows Server 2012, you may want to take the course just to get beefed up and ready to go. And I take you through all those different steps. And once you sign up, the thing is, I had somebody say once, is, Jack, when I sign up, when does the course start? As soon as you sign up and you go through that they call it the paywall or PayPal. As soon as you go through PayPal, boom, you're registered, you're on the course, start immediately. It could be 3 a.m. I could be sleeping, you can be learning. It's a wonderful concept. So there it is. And once you're a member of that course, I never delete you. So 3 years from now, you go, man, how do I set up that DNS again? Because I haven't done one for a while. Go back, log in. Your login will still work, and you can watch that video. So once again, go to tipsontheserveroom.com. Click on the online class link at the top of the page. Wow, what a long show tonight, huh? We got a lot covered, a lot accomplished tonight. Hopefully you're ready to buy that new server and you know now not to deny any donations, because you may hit the mother load one time like we did with the monitors. So keep that story in the back of your mind. Folks, I want to thank you so much. I'm very humbled with how many people are listening to this show. You know, usually you get about 1,000 downloads a week, somewhere around there, and that's pretty awesome. You know, I mean, I enjoy talking to you. Somebody once said, if you do a podcast and have 50 people listening, that's 50 people you're reaching. So we are reaching a lot of techs out there. If you know somebody in the industry and you say, hey, have you listened to Tips from the Server Room? They'll probably say, Tips from the what room? They may not know. So direct them to my site, direct them to iTunes, and have them subscribe to the podcast. Spread the word of podcast, because this is the way that maybe one day radio will be going, because we get to decide what we want to listen to. It's a wonderful concept. Folks, thank you so much. I do appreciate you being here, and I will bring you another show next Tuesday night right here at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks, folks. Take care, and I'll talk to you then. Good night, my friends. You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.